Hello and welcome to another edition of Admit One, the film podcast that delves into the cinema viewing habits of film fanatics from across the arts. Growing up in the 90s, I am especially excited to talk to today's guest, an award-winning singer-songwriter whose group sold over 20 million records worldwide.
It's such intense viewing with such clever writing and so many messages for people.
Please welcome to Admit One, founding member of E17, Tony Mortimer.
So without Enter the Dragon, I would never have got into songwriting.
Hello. Thank you so much for your time this
afternoon. Absolute pleasure, and you made me really big-headed with that intro.
Well, it was actually very, very easy to do. Tony, we know of you because of, like we said, E17 and your musical background. Mm. But when you think about film, can you remember the first time you went to the cinema or the first film you watched in your childhood? Yeah. You know, that first memory that you sat down and really enjoyed a film.
Yeah, my first film was when my parents took me to the cinema and we lived in Hackney, but he took us to the cinema in Walthamstow, weird enough, and we was going to live there and go on to, you know, I was going to make the name really famous. But at the time, we just randomly went there and we watched a film called 50,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and it was my greatest life experience of that time. I think I was about 5 or 6. I hadn't had much life experience.
Now, so often, musicians and actors kind of cross between both industries.
Yeah.
Has that ever been the case with you?
I've done a bit of acting and I studied a thing called the Meisner technique, which really helps with acting. But I take my hat off to actors, to real actors. The ones I've met are some of the most intense people and so bright and so clever that they don't just act, they don't just say lines and read scripts and put a bit of emotion in. They go in and they dissect the character that they're doing, you know, like Robert De Niro will do that, and they will spend 6 months getting into character, getting into that person. And I've heard when they've done a film that a part of that character actually lives, you've changed yourself so much it lives with you for a while, hence they get a bit messed up.
Yeah,
but they are so intense, these actors. I'd never call myself an actor, never.
When people commit to a role, you do sometimes think, do they ever kind of leave
physique,
that behind them?
Yeah, I've heard that a bit of them stays, a bit of that role stays.
You mentioned the Meisner technique.
Yes.
Could you tell us a bit more about that? Because ignorant as it may sound,
yeah,
I don't
well,
know what
it
is.
It's this technique that was created where, for example, it's all about the interaction between me and you, and the words and the script are secondary, and it's about how we're interacting and our emotions and how we're connecting. And if there's an argumentative scene, we have to argue and we have to go to that place, and an argument will develop, and it will develop different on every take. It was really intense, but it was interesting.
And did that ever lean on your on-stage performances? Because to a point, delivering on some of your songs and your music, with it being autobiographical, you know, did you ever feel that you had to really connect to every word every time you performed, or sometimes did it feel like autopilot?
It's autopilot after a while, it really is.
I can imagine.
But Stay Another Day, when I sing it, is so such an emotional song for me. It's really tough to sing. And it's got to a point now where I'm thinking I'm probably never going to perform it again. But it's really tough and that's really intense and you don't need to act. It's like, it's choking. And it sounds cliche, but there is nothing so wonderful as writing a little song in your bedroom, the size of this studio now,
which is
massive, and then 10,000 people are singing it back, and you're just standing there taking in this energy going, wow, I've really messed this world up.
Yeah. I mean, how would you describe that feeling? Because most of us will never experience that.
There's not a word. It's surreal. It's fulfilling. It's really rewarding. It really is beyond words. It really is. It's an intense feeling, and it's wonderful, and it's an absolute pleasure. And I've always say it when I perform in front of audiences. It's always an honour to perform in front of an audience because people are there to listen to you and to watch you, and they're getting something out of it and they're singing it back. And it's about them. You do perform the song, but they're there for the song and for what it means to them in their life. But when you hear a crowd sing it back, it's awesome. It really, it just takes it away. And it's not like, oh yeah, that's wicked. It's really massively intense. And because I wrote the songs, they were singing back, you know, things of my life. And I thought, oops, I've really made a mess here. Yeah. These guys, I've really affected a lot of people. But it's fantastic.
Amazing. The kid from Walthamstow, yeah. from E17. Yeah. It must have been life-changing.
You know?
There's
a great line from Noel Gallagher where he sings, I'm going to start a revolution from my bed. Now, I don't know if that was John Lennon originally, but there's a great line, and that really does sum it up. You end up in your bedroom, and I was writing songs. There's a song called Deep, which is really, it's kind of a poetical, sexual song. And you're writing it in your bedroom, you think, no one's going to hear that.
Yeah.
And the next minute, 10 years later, you're singing it, and your daughter's there listening, and you're going, why did I write that line? Why did I even bother? It's outrageous. And your mum's up in the stands, and you're going, don't.
You're like, close your ears, close yeah. your eyes. I'm not your son.
But it is crazy.
Not dad.
You write it and then it becomes a big hit, like It's All Right. It was a song that the pressure was getting to me of everything and having to write so many songs and do albums that I wrote that song to me. Don't you worry, because it's all right. Don't you worry, child of the night. Because I was always up all through the night trying to write stuff and trying to get chord progressions and find things. And it was really intense. And then it ends up being an advert with a furry purple monster. So it's very
surreal. Which I bet you also didn't predict when you were penning that in your bed.
I didn't see that one coming.
Have films ever inspired your music?
Not really, no. Yeah. Not really. I always wanted the band to do really big movies because in the 80s when I grew up, big videos were massive. And it was, you know, Michael Jackson was doing like a movie for Thriller and stuff. And I always wanted to do that. But we always got really cheap videos. So it never really worked out.
But they're iconic E17
yeah,
now.
I guess so. I dread to look and think how we're perceived. But yeah, I guess it's iconic.
Oh, well, you know, there's no one my age who doesn't know and didn't love E17.
Oh,
so you're seeing
nice.
It with great, great fondness. Absolutely.
Brilliant.
You mentioned you have two young daughters.
Yeah.
How old are the girls?
They're older now. They're coming up to 22 and 24.
22 and 24,
yeah.
What do they make of their dad, the pop star?
He's not cool.
He's
not cool. And they wouldn't let me come and pick him up from school. And they'd come home and they'd go, oh, my God, my maths teacher fancied you. And I'm like, that's my dad. And they'd say stuff like that. And they'd say, we've got our parents' evening tonight. Is your dad coming? And they're like, oh, my God, that's my dad. So it's very strange. You are never cool, no matter what you are, even if you're in a boy band or a cool boy band, you're always their dad. And they're like, can you just not come to the school, Dad, please?
Your dad and you're
your
embarrassing.
Dad. You're embarrassing. Oh, my God. I still get in there. Ocean, she said something. What was it? My mate's coming round later. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, can you not be in? All right, then, yeah, I'll just go and walk the dog or something, you know.
And you're like, God damn it, people who pay to come and see and hang out with me.
People like to be near me. Yeah, well, I don't, so just be out.
Yeah.
And that's how she speaks as well. It's awesome.
Daughters and their dads, it's like,
but they
Dad.
Keep you so grounded. You know, you can be at an awards ceremony and you come back and you think you're great and they go, oh, my God, Dad, you're so embarrassing. Why are you wearing that? Did you go out like that? And I got three women in my house. Honestly, it's like walking a catwalk. I get up in the morning, it's like, you ain't wearing that. You're not wearing, you are way too old for that.
They're making sure you're looking cool.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Now, they say that you should never meet your idols.
Yes, yes.
Have you met any of yours?
Oh, God. Well, I'm sure I've ruined a couple of memories for people that have met me. Yeah, I have met. Yeah, I've met some idols.
And who were they? And what was it like to meet them?
I met Phil Collins and I'd done a duet with him. And at one point, he was like ringing my house, and the missus would answer and say, oh, Phil's on the phone. And then I'd be like, oh my God, Phil's on the phone.
You're like, it's not just Phil, it's Phil Collins.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Play it cool, Tony.
And I go
play
over.
It cool.
Hi, Phil. How are you? So I love that, though. But, you know, some people lose that. And once you've lost that, you've lost everything. I still get starstruck now. I love it. You know, there's famous people out there. I never consider myself famous, but I meet these people. And, you know, you get that butterflies. And you always say something stupid. I met Vanessa Paradis. I was in love with Vanessa Paradis all through my childhood. Joe Latex. She was gorgeous. And I was at a studio in Belgium a couple of years ago and she walked past me and I think I said good evening, but it came out bad. And that was it. That was my moment with her. And you know, when you just say something and then she said, hey, bonsoir or something and walked in and I just thought I've ruined it. I could have like said something French to her or something. You know, I don't know what.
I'm going to go
déjà
with,
vu.
I bet you were cooler.
Mange-tu déjà vu?
I'm going to go with you were actually cooler than you think you were, because I don't go along with that.
I think a bit of dribble came out. It was one of them ones.
Proper fangirling.
I was fangirling.
You were fangirling.
I told myself off for about 20 minutes after. Never saw her again. Followed her on Twitter and she followed me back and that was it.
Tony, I think we're ready to tap into your top three films.
So
this is all of that hard work in deciding your top three, this is where we talk about it.
Yeah.
So what is the first you'd like to discuss?
They're for different reasons, but I'm going to go with my young age that had such an effect on me, and it's Bruce Lee and Enter the Dragon. And I watched that and it was the big kung fu boom of the 70s and that. And then I started doing martial arts and I still do it now, just badly and a bit more creakier. And it's had such an effect on my life.
For those who haven't seen Enter the Dragon, yes. Can you give us like a little synopsis of the film?
Yes, well, it's about a guy and he's sort of, he works for like the FBI type thing and he's got to go to this island where there's this big kung fu tournament going on. Up until then, there weren't really kung fu tournaments. Now you've got MMA and all sorts, and he was one of the original guys that kind of invented mixing martial arts together, so he was a major pioneer. And he goes over there and there's a big baddie and, you know, he kicks butt all the way to the end and then takes on the big guy at the end. And it's a great film, you know, it's a great film. It's old now, but in its day it was on the money. And he was a philosopher and he used to write philosophy and he used to write little lines and verses, be like water, my friend, when he was describing, you know, being supple and changing to the environment and stuff and changing to the situation. And so I started to write little verses and that's how I got into songwriting. So without Enter the Dragon, I would never have got into songwriting.
Really? So you'd say Enter the Dragon?
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
Got you into songwriting
and
into martial arts?
Yeah, that's when I started. Yeah, I was 10. Around about 10, and I started putting lyrics together and verses, and I started to develop that part of my brain where I started to think of clever things, you know, like his philosophies. He studied philosophy, so he was a very wise man. But that's what started me getting into lyrics.
Do you think you could choose one scene that really stands out in the film?
Yeah, I think I like the line where he's in the competition and the guy tries to show him just how good he is. So the guy smashes a board, as you know, to try and install fear in him. And I'm a kid and I'm thinking, well, that did look pretty scary, I've got to admit. And then Bruce turns around and goes, yeah, but boards don't hit back. And I was just like, you've nailed it. That's genius.
So that scene has stuck with you. How many times do you think you've seen that film?
Countless times. I couldn't imagine how many times I've watched that film. Not so much now as I've got older, but yeah, back in the day, I'd run that back to back. Yeah, loved it.
Thinking about Bruce Lee, martial arts and kung fu films, would you say that's a genre that you've continued to love?
Yeah, totally, totally. I teach kids karate now at Easter and stuff, and you can see how the magic in their eyes, you know, when they're learning it. And it's lived with me all through my life, and it's affected my diet. It's made me write songs. So, yeah, it's everything I've always got, yeah, all the way through my life. And I'll continue to do it, definitely. It's a life journey. Once you get into martial arts, it's a lifetime journey.
God, that's so amazing. I just can't believe that that film influenced, you know, you pursuing martial arts yourself, but also the songwriting. That's incredible.
Yeah,
as a 10-year-old.
It was around 14 when I started to, it became musical. But before then, I was trying to write Bruce Lee stuff. I can't remember one of my little philosophies now, but it'd be good to try and remember. I was such a kid, it'd be so crap. But it was a little four-line verse, and that's how they started. And that's still what I use today, that format in songwriting. And I change around the rhymes. Say you've got a 1-2-1-2 where the twos rhyme together, or you can go a 1-1-1-2 and then you'll change the melody at the end. So I've worked around that four way of writing lines, and that's how I kind of went off into songs.
That is absolutely extraordinary. Bruce Lee doesn't know what he learnt there.
He might have an idea by now. He's kind of changed the world in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but he doesn't know how much he inspired Tony Mortimer.
Yeah.
Tony, your second choice.
My second choice. And I've actually, going back to Bruce Lee, I've got two dragon tattoos on my back. They're the only tattoos now. I've got a dragon and a lotus, so it's all sort of interconnected in my size, just there.
Hugely inspired you.
Yeah, so now let's flip it in a completely different direction. Well, let's stick on it a little bit, because let's go with the training, and it's Rocky. For me, it's Rocky, and the thing I like about it is, okay, we'll go to what it's about later, but there's the music of Rocky. And if you just take that, I challenge anyone to play that and not do press-ups or go for a run. It's just captivating, that music. And why is it? I don't know. What is it? What's the secret behind that? But it's one of the greatest workout pieces of music ever. And I love the story of Rocky, because he came from nothing and then he went on to be world champion. And, you know, that inspired me, who was really crap at sports, to get out there and, you know, run and try and keep fit and that. And I've tried to do it all through my life, try and keep fit. As I keep fat better than I keep fit. But I've kept going, you know, and I still train now. And it's not easier. And I've not got any better and I've not got any stronger. My God. But I try. And that movie, I love that movie, you know. Adrian! I love it. He's just a normal guy. And the way you see him, he goes from this normal struggle and then he goes to sort of world champion, and how he deals with it and stuff. It's just fantastic.
So films and stories that follow that sort of rags to riches, that resonates with you because of your
story? Yeah,
totally.
I didn't want to say it, but I would sort of probably connect with it for that reason. And then, you know, the struggle you get through where you sort of, you're still that kid. You're still that, you know, nobody, but now you're a somebody and you've got this sort of, it's like a monkey on your back that you're trying to carry around and control. The thing with great films is it's the same storyline. You know, it's like Romeo and Juliet. It's done in 1,000 films and it's that same storyline. I love seeing how it's rewritten and how it's, the director will change it into their way to sort of captivate the audience. But it'll be the same, you know, that's rags to riches. You nailed it in three words. And then you've got Romeo and Juliet, the love song, the love, you know, that's so many movies. It's like, I bet Titanic have taken a bit from there and stuff. So
absolutely. All those different interpretations that you can
totally
take, you know, just adjust it and tweak it slightly. And it's a totally different film, but on that same idea.
Yeah. And it was so inspiring, Rocky. I remember the next day going for a run, and I'm not even a runner, and the amount of us that ate raw eggs after that film, you know, and we was all going down with that egg disease because we was just mixing up these raw eggs that tasted like I don't know what, but we thought if we drank it we would look like Rocky.
Did it make you guys strong and just packed with protein?
It made me a bit ill. And then I went for a run.
That makes me feel a bit sick listening to, you know, you just always.
And I remember it was
eggs.
A freezing cold morning, and I'm out there going, oh, what am I doing? It's like really cold and scary, and I just want to be back in my bed. And why have I got up at 4 a.m.? Because Rocky did. This is crazy. And why did I have them eggs? And now Mum's going to kill me for having them eggs. Where's your
Rocky
dad's
did
eggs
it,
gone?
But did you have, you know, did you have your Walkman in the soundtrack to really gear
No, but I had a Walkman, yeah. It wasn't that soundtrack, but I had a Walkman, and then I'd done a bit of boxing as well, but that really hurt, so I stopped.
Did this start a love of Sly Stallone, do you think? Did you see all the Rockies? Are you a big fan of his work?
Yeah, massive fan. And as I've got older, I realised he wasn't just a big, you know, muscly guy. He was actually a genius, and he's a genius writer, and he writes them films as well. And it's amazing. Trying to write a film would be like, you know, writing an album doesn't even compare to writing a film. And then you've got to go through the scripts, and then you've got to go into their life story. It's like, it's really intense, and you'd need a lot of life experience to be able to do that. But he's a genius. I like Sly's one of those guys as well, like Tom Cruise. You know you're going to get a good film from him. It's getting a bit strange as he gets older because his face has kind of changed a bit.
And looks like it's melting.
I'm trying to work it out. I'm like, you know, it was always funny, his face, but now it's just getting weirder, isn't it? He's morphing into something. But he's 70 now, so fair play to him.
Speaking of inspiring, warming stories, nice little segue onto our third film.
Yes.
Tony, what's your final film choice?
Well, I didn't know whether I was going to open up and let this one out, but it's A Christmas Carol. I'm a massive Charles Dickens fan, and I love the story behind it. It's just, it's such intense viewing with such clever writing and so many messages for people. And I just love it. I love it from beginning to end. It's the Christmas spirit. It's about a gnarly old guy who's, you know, he's evil and he's so tight. And I've always been generous, and I give to homeless people, and I still do, as we all, you know, we all feel sorry for him. But he was just not of that. ilk. He was not like that at all. And I love the way it changed him at the end. And I never get bored of watching it. And there's great lines in there, great writing. I mean, the guy was a genius, wasn't he? And I heard a story that Charles Dickens was a little bit dyslexic. And there's a story about Ebenezer and where he got the name from. And it was, what was it? On the tombstone, and it said something like, it was something like Scrooge. He was a mean man. And he went, wow, how could someone have such a bad life that they would write that on his tombstone? And so that's where the story came from. But it actually said he was a meal man. And he worked with meals and he, you know, delivered. And it was actually, he was a meal man. And that's where it came from. But he was a little bit dyslexic and he read it as he was a mean man. And that was what I heard as the story behind it.
I have never heard that. So that's where Ebenezer Scrooge came from, Charles Dickens.
So he wrote this story about, you know, a mean man. And it's all around London. I love old London. I love the Victorian age, the Dickens era. It's all around Leadenhall Market, where he got the turkey at the end and stuff. And I love all that. And I watch it every year. And I think it's a great lesson for people who are mean.
I was going to say, how does that film make you feel? Because at good Christmas time...
Good wins in the end. That's what I like about it. And the horrible, nasty businessmen that are out there and we all bump into, they've got to change. They got to change or they're going to meet the ghosts.
Those Christmas films that we revisit every year. There's a reason why they make us feel
I watch it. I can't get bored of watching it every year. For me, it's Christmas. And it's not Christmas until I've seen that.
Tony Mortimer, as well as your top three films, there's one other question that I always ask my guest on Admit One, and that is, who would play you in the movie of your life?
Oh, that's even worse than
I know, it's tricky. And it's a surprise question as well.
In what way? Because I've got
have
so
to be
many
looks,
sides of my
It's not looks.
What are you saying? Doesn't have to be look. Where are you going with that one?
I mean, because people rack their brains trying to think of an actor who they think looks like them.
Yeah.
Which is what we've had so far. People going, God, but I don't really look like anyone. But it could be someone you love and respect who you think would do, who would play out your life so well, or just a total, you know, a total fantasy one.
I would go with who would Kevin James Moorcock. Yeah, I just think he's genius, and he's me. He is so me. And as I've got older, because my family have grown up with me doing martial arts, and I might have saw myself as a bit of a Bruce Lee, but they call me Kung Fu Panda. And the resemblance is uncanny. It really is. So it'd probably be, you know, arguably Jack Black in that mode, or Kevin James.
Kung Fu Panda.
I mean, I would have liked to have said Brad Pitt or Sly or Arnold. I've just killed it, haven't I? But I'm going to go with...
Absolutely not. You've
Kung
not killed
Fu
it
Panda
at all.
And Kevin James.
I love that. Well, let's not forget his dancing in Hitch, right?
Oh, yes. And the slap.
Come
Don't
on,
ever do that again.
Spinning the pizza.
And the earbud thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That and Jack Black, Kung Fu Panda, Tony Mortimer, you have been such a delightful guest. Thank you for your time. I'm now going to call you Kung Fu Panda.
People do.
Thank you so much for coming on Admit One. What a delight.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. Next week on Admit One.
And I was just so overwhelmed with how many of these films were male-led and action-packed.
The director of Bechdel Test Fest, Karina Antrobus.
When it came to the female-led films, they were given less prominence. They were like, oh, well, this one, it's gone straight to DVD, but you don't need to worry about that one so much. I was just like, wait a minute, but that's the one that I really like the sound of.
Don't forget to subscribe to Admit One on iTunes for more movie memories from my stellar lineup of guests. Admit One with Antonia O'Brien is an Audioboom production.